I am G.D. Cohen, and on behalf of the Group for Research on Experimental Accumulation and Speculative Archives, I have come to the conference this weekend to present our project, the Vallaco Archive.
That's great. So tell me just a tiny bit more. You're a representative, so who else is involved?
One way perhaps to think of ResArch is like a guild, sort of an intellectual guild of loosely affiliated, independently working people, all of whom in some ways, let's just say that we all execute complementary functions of common projects.
Okay.
We'll leave it at that.
One thing that I wanted to just articulate is that you were just on a really fantastic panel, so my goal here is not to ask you to repeat the material that you've already shared.
Right.
Instead, Span's interest in this battery of questions is to be able to pull out a little bit, to pull out additional information that can provide the beginning of an expanded context or behind the scenes, you know, thinking. So with that said,
love the idea of expanding contexts in expansion.
Wonderful.
So I'm happy to.
So, but with that said, could you just take a brief moment to tell us what you're working on now? And I'm assuming that would be the project that you shared with us today at the conference.
Absolutely. The Vallaco Archive. The Vallaco Archive is what we are referring to as a speculative archive, and its very logic of design is to generate, assess, assemble, acquire, discard, reacquire objects, images, elements that can produce, let's say, potential knowledge about a subject, a historical persona, whose identity is difficult, if not impossible, to verify. Nonetheless, we have a very enigmatic document that attests to the identity of its author as the putative member of a large group of movie extras on the set of the last German film production made during the Third Reich. It's an interesting case in German and actually in world film history because the film maker, Veit Harlan, he was a very well-known German filmmaker, a notorious German filmmaker because of his anti-Semitism. But the film itself, called Kohlberg, required thousands and thousands of bodies for its epic battle and crowd scenes. And Harlan was given express consent by the propaganda minister, Joseph Goebbels, at the time to call, some 20,000 German Wehrmacht soldiers from the front lines, many on the Eastern Front, over the course, not all at once, but over the course of the film's 9 months of production. We don't have really any testimony of those experiences, so the Vallaco notebooks, the notebooks that emerged in an archive in the middle of Buenos Aires in the spring of 2004, would suggest the presence of its author on that set. And
interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. You use the phrase speculative archive. I'm really curious, you know, what is productive in putting those two words together, speculative with archive, as well as the organizing principle of this particular convening, radical archive? Are there things that are aligned? Are there distinctions?
I think there really are. It's interesting. This has certainly been an enlightening experience for me here at the conference because I think I've learned about many versions of the concept of radical archives. The speculative archive would be yet another iteration, I think, of the concept of the radical archive. I think in the case of the speculative archive, what is radical is not so much a question of its content, though depending on how one thinks about the very idea of the content of the archive, the content of ours could be radical too. But I think it's really the relationship, a particular relationship with time, that distinguishes what is radical about the speculative archive, with time and perhaps with space as well. If we think about the archive, the conventional or institutional archive, is something ordered around centrifugal forces, centripetal forces, forces that are a pulling towards the center, right? Then we might say of the speculative archive that its sort of physical logic is centrifugal. In other words, it emanates outward in many directions simultaneously, and that actually this centrifugal property, of course, we know from the laws of physics that a centrifugal force is actually a fictional force. It's a false force. It doesn't really exist in the physical world. It's simply a sort of an inverse of the actual centripetal forces that are all anchored to a center. So the centrifugal force is not exactly the physical inverse of a centripetal force, but rather the sort of the notion of the opposite force. And so I would say that that is a defining property of the speculative archive. This then suggests that the speculative archive has a very different relationship to things like the present, the past, and the future than the institutional archive. If the conventional archive, and I sometimes like to talk in sort of oppositional terms like this, even though we're well beyond structuralism, we all know it and it doesn't matter anymore, sometimes they're very useful for creating pictures in our minds of things. If we could say of the conventional or institutional archive, the archive of the state, the archive of power, we might say that that archive is concerned with a context in the past. It has a certain topology. It has certain relationships that then generate the elements in the archive, which bear a very direct relationship to that topology in the past. The speculative archive, which I do believe is radical in this very sense, perhaps just shifts the emphasis to a different topology, and that would be a topology of the future. That is, that it assembles elements in the present, the relationships of among which suggest future forms, or future knowledges, if you could say, that we don't actually, the experience of which we don't have yet, but we do have an experience in the present of the forms, the relationships among the elements as we collect them, assemble them, rearrange them, discard some in order to make room for others. And these seem to suggest something that we will know of the past in the future and experience only in the present as relationships. How's that?
Wow. So you started to head into this for sure, but I guess I would love a little bit more detail on how does working with or shaping a speculative archive, what are some of the different activities and practices that are particularly useful to do and that you've found that you're doing as a part of your project?
Right. Well, very broadly speaking, sort of the overarching practice, at least for the Valaco archive at the moment, is appropriation. That is a sort of harvesting of objects, images, materials from everyday life, from existing collections, from junk heaps, from just sort of the everyday detritus of everyday life. We also do something that we refer to as forensics. And this would be, to give you an example, we might look at the film Cold Bag, for example. We'll take a DVD and we'll start examining it frame by frame. And in those frames, we might identify things that, when moving, would be completely lost to the viewer. Those then become the basis for speculation. They also bear relationships to other objects that are much more visible and much more prominent in the frame. They also seem to bear untold relationships with things outside the frame. And yet there they are, in plain invisibility, as it were. And so we do forensic research on moving images, on photographs, on postcards, on documents, to give you an idea.
Wow, that's really fascinating. In terms of the relationship to your creative practice, mm-hmm. Where does and how does archiving and activism fit into your experience over time, defiant of time?
Well, in terms of archiving and activism, I would need to admit that I personally consider myself neither an archivist nor an activist per se. I consider myself more an artist, perhaps even kind of like a sculptor. The Vlaco Archive might be, perhaps metaphorically at least, a kind of sculpture. And it is a sculpture of time. It's a sculpture of futurity, futureness, if you will. Activism. I'm going to have to leave the question of activism, I think, for others to address, perhaps others who at some point encounter the Vlaco Archive and find what is activist about it. Because I don't think it's inimical to the idea of activism in that radical sense. But I think perhaps only in the tools that it generates for other activists who also archivize, you know, who also engage in some kind of archival practice. And we're definitely interested in both appropriating archival practices that exist and inventing them, for sure. So that's a kind of activism, I think.
It's interesting. You got to start somewhere to begin to get people to move around a lot of the more expected terms that could be associated with words like radical. I've really appreciated that we have gotten lots of different responses, some individuals feeling like it feeds very naturally into the way they describe themselves, other people not at all.
Right.
But perhaps something that does make me curious is zeroing in on the Third Reich. What would be some of the instigating or catalytic kind of influences that made that your focus?
Well, on the one hand, I do also exercise the functions of a film scholar, at least some of them, and I also have a personal connection to both Germany and Buenos Aires, or Germany and Argentina. I've lived in both countries. I speak both German and Spanish. I am also very interested in the migrations of Germans to the New World. And what's interesting is that we all know the fairly the infamous stories of Nazis, of Nazi war criminals who ventured to Latin America, of course, after the war. And I'm not uninterested in those stories. But what I find so fascinating is is this idea of, I don't know, this notion of a country full of common criminals. That is, average, everyday, conscripted soldiers whose status as Germans during World War II is also very complicated. Vlaco would be an instance of somebody who is escaping, but he's not escaping. He's not escaping the threat of sort of trial for war crimes. He may indeed be escaping implications in a terrible horror, but for other reasons. Mm-hmm. I mean, he would never have been subject to some kind of war trial. He was a foot soldier, which is not to say that he's not guilty the way that we all are in so many ways, but that the forces that sort of deposit him in South America are very different. They bear certain relationships with New World travelers from the days of the Spanish conquest. There were many German soldiers of fortune on the Spanish missions, not religious missions, but military missions to the New World. Many, tens of thousands, as a matter of fact, set sail from Cadiz and points along the coast to the New World. Those are histories that I have studied, and so there is a direct sort of interest in a kind of avatar of people like Ulrich Schmidl, who wrote one of the first New World Chronicles as a German Schwäbisch soldier, a landsman, as it were, who spent 20 years roaming around precisely the areas that Valacco himself would have roamed around and seems to have roamed 500 years later.
Wow. That's really fascinating. One of our other speculative questions, I really like that word, by the way, is what does it mean to you to archive for the present? You've indicated past, present, future, all these things,
sure,
you know, really dynamic relationships, especially in the way you think and work. So what does it mean to you?
Well, I think the idea of archiving for the present is really about the conditions of the production of memory, and maybe we could call it mnemonic knowledge.
Okay.
The conditions are shifting. The sands of the conditions of memory and the production of the way we know via memory are obviously in a state of intense transformation. And it perhaps even is banal to say that it's because of the way that our existences are so mediated in so many ways, and in ways that perhaps we don't even suspect. Actually, in ways that we know we don't suspect, if that's possible. And so I am really interested in trying to engage very directly with that, you know, slippery process of the transformation of our forms of mnemonic knowledge. And I think then to archive for the present is really to try and imagine the way we will remember the present in the future, and to actually intervene,
okay,
in the forms, in the production of the forms, which will someday hold the content of our knowledge of the past that we're living as a present now.
I feel like I'm on a Mobius strip with you right now, which is really fun.
I'm happy to go round and round the Mobius strip with you as long as you want, as a matter of fact.
Excellent. So, one of the things that really attracted me to come to this conference is that I come through a pretty standard contemporary visual arts community. I really respect the Archive of the Disappeared that Mariam and Chitra have been working on, and was so interested to see what kind of a group would form around this opportunity. And I'm curious, from your vantage point in terms of the presentations that you've seen, the people that either are familiar or not familiar, In terms of the different places you find yourself talking about your work and sharing them, how similar is this convening in its makeup, or how different is it?
Well, I will admit that I have felt like a bit of an outlier here. And that doesn't bother me in the least. As a matter of fact, I feel privileged to be here as an outlier. I am also deeply interested in the work of Mariam and Chitra and other fellow travelers, from Waleed Rod and the Atlas Group to another group of artists who refer to themselves precisely as Speculative Archive, Julia Meltzer and David Thorne, I believe. So I certainly feel in good company and among friends. I know that at least at first blush, the concerns of the Vlaco Archive don't seem to be immediately preoccupied with that kind of direct activism, a sort of that kind of engagement in current events. But I hope that I think acquired a lot of new fuel for ways to continually reconceptualize the work of the Vlaco Archive and of Rezarch in particular. Learned of ways to perhaps, or at least begun to sense some of the new ways that we could anchor this even more in the present. But I also hope that that people like Chitra and Mariam and certainly people like Hadassah Damian of the Interference Archive in Brooklyn could perhaps profit from a visit to the Vlaco Archive and think about the ways in which we are developing tools, perhaps aesthetic tools. I think it's really what we're dealing with here, aesthetic tools. Aesthetic, of course, there is a politics of aesthetics. This idea that we can create new conditions through an aesthetics for the reconfiguration of what is visible, what is sensible, what is sayable in the now. That's where our work is taking place.
I would love to hear you just continue along that trajectory, because I do think that is a unique point to investigate together that I haven't necessarily captured in some of my other conversations. Mm. So can you drill down into one particular... it could be a story of success of a new tool, or it could be a story of challenge and like, okay, we tried this and it's really not working.
Well, perhaps I could refer to a dimension of the Vlaco Archive itself that exists right now that is, grossly sort of underutilized. As a matter of fact, it hasn't been utilized at all yet, and we're waiting for it to come to the attention of people out there. But there's a place on the website where people can get involved, people can intervene, people can actually begin to curate the Vlaco Archive as it's evolving. And the idea is really for people to respond to the materials that are already assembled in the archive and begin to suggest ways to reconfigure it and perhaps even get rid of what's there and replace it with other things, or suggest new objects that haven't yet been acquisitioned or accessioned, bring in other evolving archives that could then sort of meld with, in certain ways, aspects of the Vlaco Archive. This is the same reason why we eventually hope to bring archivists, artists, scholars, curators to engage with the archive and curate installations of the archive themselves based on their deliberations over its many sort of philosophical gambits, its structures, its modes of production. So I think that that is a tool that is yet as yet, I'm not going to call it a failure. It's sort of a nascent tool that we're waiting to develop. We're looking for people who perhaps can help us develop it. But that is really a way to sort of, I think, promote a particular kind of engagement with material culture, with visual culture, with the objects, the images, with which we engage so sort of haplessly on a daily basis. We find things. We find objects and things all the time. We just don't realize that we're finding them. And we don't realize that as we find them, we have the capacity to put them into contexts, to new contexts, to contexts that will generate future relationships. If we can begin to bring other, interlocutors and interveners into the process, I think that that is a radically constructive tool for a kind of an archival practice of the present.
Well, depending on who listens to this, we might be able to help, generate some participation
Well, that would be terrific.
and interaction.
We welcome it.
Is there anything else that would be useful to talk about or to share at this point? I feel like we've got some really good coverage, but there's always maybe one last thought that.
I would say at this stage that my only parting request is that people visit tevolacoarchive.com and resarch.com and see what it's all about.
That's great. We can definitely make sure that happens.